There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1068, November 5th, 2024. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Max's gain is Lando's pain. His championship hopes down the drain. Machismo under the weather. Magnussen calls in sick. We shall explain carefully. Back to you, sir.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Max says this is a championship, not a church. Norris says Max just got lucky. LCH can't take it anymore. Fernando's back is killing him. And this could have been Renault's last podium forever. So we should all enjoy that. And this week's interviews, ladies and gentlemen, we've got Derek Warwick from A Kinder and Gentler Time in F1. And Jada. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen. Jada, cheerleader for the Dallas Cowboys. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, we do need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nass, I know this was a good one. A lot of tears of joy. Donington 93. Nass, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Man, what a suspenseful Grand Prix in Sao Paulo. Absolutely thrilling, and I enjoyed it very, very much. Max is now on the Steve Winwood program. Back in the high life again. All the doors that were closed are open once again. Championship number 4. Maybe dancing on the strip in Vegas, baby. He made the competition look like a rat pack. They were scurrying around, wondering where did Max go. He was so far behind on the grid. How he do that? Lando is too late the hero of the 2024 season. Mr. Rogers, before we look at Colley and sprint race, can we get a quickie from you on the race? Your hombre had that not-so-fresh feeling over the weekend. Did that dampen your enthusiasm for the Sao Paulo Grand Prix?
Well, Nasser, he certainly didn't have a great weekend. And boy, Lance, Mr. Invisible, he's an interesting one, and he'll be the talk for the next few weeks on what the hell is going on there. But no, what a great race, Fernando. The old men behaved like old men. You had to hand them their walker after they got out of the car, and they could barely get to their bunk. But man, oh man, oh man, we got a doozy. We really did get a doozy. It was awesome. It was unbelievable, especially as the penalties and the awkwardness and the uncomfortable feeling in the paddock with the Brits and the Dutch. I'm telling you, you just can't write a better script than what was provided here. And it's entertaining. It was great television. It was confusing television because of the delay. But my goodness, even qualifying was so exciting yet so disappointing. It's fantastic. And you got to give it to Renault and Flavio. Flavio, bravo, bravo, and bravo.
Now we look at sprint, collie, and race. Papaya rules the front row. Piastri on pole and Lando second. Row two, Charles Leclerc and Mr. Patrick McGowan, the danger man of motor racing. What a performance from Ollie Bearman, making it to Q3 and very, very impressively out-qualifying teammate Nico Hülkenberg, who is no slouch and he is very, very good in the rain. Ollie was replacing K-Mag, who called in sick. Bearman is the first driver in Formula One history to score points for two different teams in his first two races. He was 7th in the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix for Ferrari and 10th on his Haas debut in the Land of Fire, and that would be Azerbaijan. I had a chat with Ollie in Austin, very nice kid, and prior to that I met his papito and grandpa at Imola, so obviously very good upbringing and a mighty fine racing driver also. McLaren 1-2 in Collie was also the same result in the sprint race, but in reverse order. Lando took his first ever sprint race victory after his teammate OP was advised of papaya rules. Ferrari of Charles Leclerc was third, with Max first man among out of the podium finishers. But that was just the sprint race. The main show was on Sunday. Your thoughts on the sprint race, amigo?
It was interesting. I have to admit, I did expect Max to be more machismo, and I was curious on where the speed of the Ferraris, you know, we've had a 1-2 Ferrari, and I thought they were going to go for the triplet, the trifecta. I don't know. They really languished. I was quite surprised by that. Also, I think the team orders at McLaren, you know, just for a point or two, it's such an awkward situation. I would skip the whole thing altogether and just go, baby. And I'm surprised Zach hasn't done that because really, I mean, let's face it. If you're going to win a championship, you got to be machismo. And nickel and diming is not going to get it to you. And I know we've won championships by a half a point, so probably I shouldn't say these things. But nevertheless, switching places, I just thought it was awkward. But I'm happy for Norris. He got his sprint win, and Zach is full of himself.
Now we do a quickie on slippery collie for the GP. Rainmeister in the year BM being before Max, Lewis Hamilton out in Q1, calling his Mercedes damn car. I am sure that must have gone down very well with Toto. His teammate had no problem getting into Q2. Max stamped his authority with the fastest time. Surprise of Q2 was Sainz Jr. into the wall of voodoo going into turn 2. In the dying seconds, mother's little helper and daddy's little Jim Clark crashed and brought out the red flag. What a drag it is going Grand Prix racing for Lance Stroll. This meant both Red Bulls out in Q2. Max was 12th fastest plus 5 place grid penalty put him 17th on the grid. Now we come to Q3. Oh dear, machismo lost it in the mist. 2 Aston Martins, 2 red flags. That's the way you do it. But wait, there's more. Albon was running second when he crashed out and we had 5th red flag situation of the session. Blame it on Brembo. When Collie was finally over, and I think it took like 90 minutes to finish the session, it was all smiles for King Charles in the Buckingham Palace. His zestfully washed subjects occupied the front row, Lando on pole and George Russell next to him. Tremendous performance from the two Visa Cash App RB cars. Yuki charged to third place on the grid, his best start in F1, and Liam Lawson was fifth, delivering another Bon Jovi shot through the heart and you're to blame to Checo, who I think is now a deep-fried chimichanga at Red Bull. I really, really cannot see how they will keep him next season. Sharing row 3 with Lawson was Leclerc in his Ferrari. Esteban Ocon was 4th. And as we all know, misery loves company. Both the Aston Martin crashers were on row 5. Needless to say, Alonso ahead of Stroll. Any interesting observation on your part on the qualifying, Senor?
Well, unfortunately, I did get to see the qualifying, just the highlights. I made an educated guess on what to record on hopefully what channel. And I did get some exciting pickleball championship. But it is what it is. I mean, with all the delays, even the TV didn't know what was going on. And then, every time it said Formula One, it wasn't Formula One. It was more pickleball. So I had a lot of problems there, Nasser.
Now we come to the race, the Sao Paulo Grand Prix. Rain is the great equalizer, or so they say. Lance was the first to prove this. He did an Alain Prost at Imola 1991, spinning out on the formation lap. I wonder if Lance told the team owner, "Daddy, the track tricked me." The other was George Russell. The Sao Paulo Grand Prix proved that Max is not the only driver who can get ahead of Lando Norris when he is on pole position. And it looks like, for the most part, Charles Leclerc has the same issue. Georgie Boy got the jump on Lando and led the race with authority. Top five at the end of the opening lap were Russell, Norris, Sonoda, Ocon, and Leclerc. While Max had already moved into top 10, his teammate had already done a spinneroo on lap 1. Lap 5, Max 9th and his teammate 18th. Lando pumping fastest laps, chasing his compadre Russell. By lap 10, Max had made up 10 places, passing Piastri for 7. Behrman gets a 10-second penalty for giving a love tap to Colapinto's Williams, and Ollie questioned why when there was no loss of position or damage to Colapinto's car. But you know, these days, especially these days, rules are rules. Lap 12, LCH goes on the green grass of his second home and was passed by Colapinto. Rookie passing record holder. What is this world coming to? By now, Max was already knocking on top 5. Singing, "I hear you knocking, but you can't come in," does not work against Max. If the door does not open, he will knock it down, as Sebastian Vettel found out in Mexico some years ago. Lap 15, Yuki was still hanging out in third. The fact that he had not crashed or spun out was quite a surprise to me. So it was very impressive, good going for him. Conditions were perfect for him to be Pastor Maldonado, but he surprised us all, so all credit goes to him. Leclerc, on the other hand, was feeling the heat from Max on lap 16 of 70. Top four were not troubling each other, but by lap 24, Leclerc was being lassoed by the Red Bull Matador, the Max factor kicking in. Dr. Marco and Mr. Horner were already smelling success. Max into top 5 when Leclerc made his pit stop on lap 25. Number 27 spins on lap 27, and that would be Mr. Nico Hülkenberg. Safety car was the signal to me that this will be Max's first up in victory. And you may ask why, and here is the reason, sir. Simple pretzel logic. I have seen in over 50 years of following Formula One, the truly great drivers only need one little chance to grab the bull by the horn and slay the competition. Some of us will remember the race in 2007 at the Nürburgring when Massa dominated in his Ferrari. Then, late in the race, came a little bit of rain, and all it took was a little bit of an opening, and somebody snatched the win away from Felipe Baby. Who could that be, Mr. Rogers? Esteban took the lead with Max second after the leading Brits came in for tire change. Georgie Boy was really pissed off and the race was red flagged.
We'll be across there. I think stay out. It should go red.
Understood. So box.
I think now it's going to go red.
Box. We need to box. So red flag.
I said it! Should have stayed out.
Red flag meant all the drivers who did not stop could get a free pit stop. Did somebody say Abu Dhabi 2021? I knew right then and then who was going to win this race. When there are over 30 laps to go and Max is second, there is no way to stop him. He is rolling thunder on the track. Mr. Rogers, what were you expecting at the restart?
Man, you're right. I mean, by the time he got up to the front of the spear, it was like, well, there he goes again. I mean, I really didn't expect it from 17th because obviously the car is not as competitive. Obviously, Perez is the exacting example of that. But Max just has his way with that car. And I'm telling you, it was phenomenal. It was one of the greatest drives in the rain. And it was raining. I mean, it's Sao Paulo. It's good wet rain. It was very impressive. It was the drive of the ages, especially for the British press. Man, I'm loving it.
Green means go, and when it did on lap 34, I was very surprised Esteban was able to get away from Max, of all the people, and was like 2 or 3 seconds ahead, so nowhere near the DRS zone. But there was still a lot of motor racing left. On lap 40, hero from Mexico into the wall of voodoo, and that would be Senor Carlos Sainz Jr. Another safety car, so I say watch out, Esteban. The race went green again on lap 43, and this time Max gave Ocon a taste of honey as he passed his Alpine Tivana taxi to take the lead. And that's all she wrote. Nobody is going to pass Max in slippery conditions. He is too slick for that. Early race leader George was fifth and championship challenger Lando languishing in seventh. Pretty obvious at this stage, championship is slip and sliding away. But who can blame him? The McLaren car came on song way too late to overcome 7 early victories by Max. Once Max took the lead, he got down to business of building cushion lap after lap. He was 3 seconds ahead within 3 laps. By lap 50, his lead was over 5 seconds. Lap 55, another argy-bargy between dos amigos, Liam Lawson and Checo Perez, the Kiwi keeping his car ahead. Lap 67, we hear from a kinder and gentler machismo. He is in massive pain and suffering, but was trifle polite to say, I will finish the race for the mechanics. And that is very thoughtful of him. And that's, you know, it's very respectful of him to talk like that. Race distance was reduced to 69 from 70 laps because of aborted start earlier, thanks to Stroll spinning and beaching his Aston Martin. When the checkered flag came out, Max was 18 seconds ahead of the departing Alpine driver Esteban Ocon. His fellow Francais and teammate Pierre Gasly was third. Both drivers have 1 win each. Ocon in Hungary and Gasly at Monza. This was fourth podium for Ocon and fifth for Gasly. Gasly was also celebrating his 150th Grand Prix start, and this is the first time two French drivers on the podium since the 1997 Spanish Grand Prix, when Olivier Panis was second and Jean Alesi was third behind race winner and say whatever I want, Mr. JV. Russell was fourth. He looked really in control and could have won if there was no full course yellow or red flag. But it is slippery when wet and somebody was going to screw up sooner or later. Leclerc was fifth for Ferrari. Then came the McLaren of Norris in sixth after starting from pole. What a great opportunity to keep the championship battle raging with Lando on pole and Max back of the bus at the start. This was wasted through time and circumstances. The McLaren team focus is now on capturing the Constructors' Championship, which is in itself a great achievement against a one-man Red Bull team, and something McLaren has not done since 1998. And that will mean a lot of money coming into their bank account. Yuki was seventh. Like George, he could have been a contender for podium finish, but he impressed me by bringing the car home in difficult conditions. Piastri was eighth. I think his manager, Mark Webber, sees a little bit of himself in how things are going out for his client at McLaren. Liam Lawson was ninth. Like his teammate, he is fast and feisty, but not foul-mouthed. And Liam may have a new teammate in 2025, and I hope his initials are MV. There was a Mexican standoff for the final point from 10th place. Senor Hamilton was able to hold off Sergio Perez. So, one Red Bull driver wins the race after starting 17th, and the other driver fails to score a single point after starting 12th on the grid. This is victory number 8 of the season and number 62 of Max's wonderful high-pressure F1 career. People are going crazy about his performance in the Brazilian Samba on Sunday. Some are comparing it to Donington 1993. As great and impressive his performance was, this is SOP, and we're not talking Sound of Philadelphia, for driver of his caliber. The number of such drivers can be counted on the fingers of one hand, even if you go back 20, 30, 40 years. What is your opinion of Max's performance? Perhaps it reminds you of Machismo's victory in Valencia Street Race when he also started from the outside top 10. And, you know, we have to throw his name anyway.
It was a fantastic victory, a fantastic race. The circumstances, lady luck, everybody was involved. And that's what you want to see. And you had two old guys crying about bouncing and their backs, which shows you that, you know, if you looked at Colapinto, he didn't complain about his back because he was too busy crying in his beer. Williams certainly did suffer a lot of crashing this weekend. It must have been brutal when they had to go pay the bills at Napa. But, man, what a Grand Prix. This is what we live for. This is what we always want. And it's absolutely amazing. And I certainly hope Fernando gets a better car next year. And Lewis Hamilton, I hope he's competitive in the Ferrari against Leclerc, because it'll be good to see the old men of the sea still have a shot at it. But yes, Max is just undeniably a great driver.
Now, as we all know, for every winner, there's a loser, and there are two sides to every story. So we come to Lando lamentation. He said after the race, and I quote, "So there's nothing we did wrong. I don't care what people say. Staying out was not the right thing to do. It shouldn't have been red flag, but obviously there was the crash in the end which caused the red. So it's just life. Sometimes you take a gamble, it's paid off for them. It's not talent, it's just luck. Just a bit unlucky," end quote. Well, there is element of truth in there, but in life and in racing, you have to work with what's out there. And I think it was one of these situations that gave Lando Norris his first victory in Miami this year. So what goes around comes around. And but I've said, you know, many times on the podcast, and I said it earlier, a few minutes ago, you know, if Max is in the top five with 10, 15 laps to go, and he has a competitive car, this guy is going to find a way to the front. You know, if you close the inside lane, he's going to go on the outside, and he's the very best I've ever seen passing people on the outside. If none of the options are available, then he can do push and shove also. He's very good at that also. Anyway, so let's look at some factoid from Brazil. First time since 1984 that the race time was moved forward. And that was the one and only Dallas Grand Prix. Race started at 11 a.m. instead of 2 p.m. thanks to Texan heat. Mr. Mansell will remember this one not so gladly. First time since the 2019 Japanese Grand Prix that Quali and race took place on same day, Sunday. The double podium finish for the English-based French team, soon to be powered by a German engine, has put them sixth in the Constructors' Championship with 49 points. They are only 3 points ahead of Haas and 5 ahead of Visa Cash App RP. And it was very nice to see both these Ocon and Gasly. You know, they are not the best of friends, but as kids, they race together. They are from the northern part of France, both of them. And it's interesting that Esteban Ocon family bought his first go-kart from the family of Pierre Gasly. So, very nice, very emotional. Cash is king to the tune of $20 million between 6th and 8th place finish in the Constructors' Championship. So, we're talking a lot of money here. Sir, this was very important, very sentimental. The sweet sound of McLaren Honda coming down on the Sunday shift. An honorary Brazilian citizen and Sir Hamilton drove Ayrton Senna's 1990 championship-winning McLaren MP4/5 on Sunday before the race. He was going to do this on Saturday, but there was too much rain, so it was moved to Sunday. He called the experience the greatest honor of my career. Quite a statement. Mr. Rogers, geezers like you and I, we have great memories of that car fighting like there was no manana with Mansell and his BFF Prost. The image of that car going through the Monaco tunnel and that beautiful sound. Oh boy, do we miss those days. I only saw the man with the yellow helmet once in the streets of Phoenix, Arizona, 1991. The dry heat was rising behind him, and at one point, he had a 45-second lead. The most successful driver in the history of Formula One driving that car at Senna's home track was quite a scene. Must have been very emotional for his sister Vivienne, who was at the track, and other family members and thousands of his fans at the track and worldwide. I have to say, hey Jackie, what you doing now? It seems like yesterday when you were working out Ayrton Senna and asking him.
Let me ask you another difficult question. If I were to count back all the world champions, and after all, this is the 500th Grand Prix, that if you totaled up all of those great champions, the number of times they had made contact with other drivers, that you in the last 36 months or 48 months have been in contact with more other cars and drivers than they might have done in total.
I find amazing for you to make such a question, Stuart, because you are very experienced and you know a lot about racing. And you should know that by being a racing driver, you are under risk all the time. And by being a racing driver means you are racing with other people. And if you no longer go for a gap that exists, you're no longer a racing driver, because we are competing We are competing to win. And the main motivation to all of us is to compete for a victory. It's not to come third, fourth, fifth, or sixth.
But hasn't that always been the case?
Now it's time to sweeten the atmosphere. As we all know, Brazil is the land of samba and famous for Rio Carnival. Here in the good old US of A, we have Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders to keep mankind happy and excited. And today we have one of them in the palatial studio. And she is a fan of Formula One Grand Prix motor racing. So please welcome Miss Jada. Okay, folks, I'm here at the Circuit of Americas with Miss Jada. Your name and hometown, please.
Yes, my name is Jada McLean. That's J-A-D-A-M-C-L-E-A-N. And my hometown is Palm Springs, California.
Southern California, great. I am told you're an avid Formula One fan. How and when did you discover the beauty of Grand Prix racing?
Yes, I've always been a fan of F1, but in the last 3 years, I've really become a super fan, as they say. I watched Drive to Survive on Netflix, and it really just inspired me seeing the lives of the racers out off of the racetrack. And so I've just really taken a liking to it recently and followed them throughout the season.
Yes, Netflix has done wonders for Formula One. Who do you think is more of a rock star on that series, Gunther Steiner or Daniel Ricciardo?
Ooh, I'm a Daniel Ricciardo fan, so I'm going to have to go with Daniel. I think he's a star on his own. He has the best energy and the best personality.
That he does. Now, I'm told Lewis Hamilton is your favorite driver. Next year, he's jumping on a prancing horse and will race for Ferrari. Is your loyalty to the driver or to the Mercedes team?
If I'm going to be completely honest, my loyalty is to the driver. So next season, I will no longer be a Mercedes fan. I'm going to be a Ferrari fan.
Okay, great. Understandable. Lewis's main rival is Max Verstappen. Any love for him?
A simple answer, no.
Well, I expected that. Thank you. Okay, of all the races you have seen on television, there are some great racing tracks around the world. Which one would you like to visit someday to watch a Formula One race?
My dream is to visit Monaco. I think it's just unique in its sense. It's the shortest race on the track, but I think it's one of the most difficult ones for them. So my dream is to one day go and attend the Monaco Grand Prix.
It is an awesome place. Okay, working as a cowboy cheerleader, I am sure involves a lot of training and hard work. Can you give us a little background on how you became a cheerleader and what is involved in joining them and training with them?
Yes, of course. I've been a dancer my entire life. I danced 18 years. Then I went off to college and continued to dance. And during COVID, I decided to try out for the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders. There was an extensive 2.5-week training camp where we were secluded in what we called the bubble. And we danced day in, day out. We had interviews. They really just wanted to get to know us as dancers, but also as people. And then I was fortunate enough to make the team, and I have been here ever since cheering. This is my 5th season as a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader, and it is really extensive to be on the team. It's a very demanding team to be on. There's a lot of practices that we have throughout the week, a lot of different appearances that we attend, and of course game days on Sundays, but it's also one of the most rewarding jobs.
Great. Now, some people, especially guys, think cheerleaders are just showgirls and models. But I remember watching a documentary some years ago where there were ladies who were lawyers and business owners. You are going to college in your home state of California. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the other ladies in your group? What kind of educational and professional background they have?
Yes, correct. We have CPAs on our team. We have school teachers on our team. We have business owners and entrepreneurs. So we're definitely a wide range of women. We all have taken our education very seriously and hope to continue pursuing our education further after, you know, our time on the team, if not doing so while here. But yes, we are all women of many backgrounds, and we take pride in, you know, our education and what we've done, as well as being cheerleaders.
Great. Now, NFL and F1 have one thing in common. Winning is the name of the game. Is the excitement of cheerleaders less when the Cowboys are down in the fourth quarter, especially to teams like Giants and Eagles?
There's a lot of excitement in the NFL, especially on game days. Those fourth quarters are big games, but we do our best to just stay excited for the team, win or lose, stay positive, and just keep the fans engaged.
Great. Now, like you discovered Formula One, I am sure there are many who one day will discover the joy of attending an NFL game. What would you give as the best reason or two to come to a Dallas Cowboys game in the Big D?
Yes. Besides Dallas being an amazing city, we have a beautiful stadium and a lot to offer. So I think anybody who has the opportunity to come to AT&T Stadium and see a Cowboys game should definitely put it on their bucket list.
Okay. Finally, thanks again for your time. Do you have social media where racing fans can follow what you're up to?
Yes, I do have social media. You can follow at DC Cheerleaders to follow all things Dallas Cowboys Cheerleaders. And then I also have my own Instagram page, JadaBug0203.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. All the best.
Thanks, nice meeting you. Too.
Yeah.
Jada, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nass, you getting thirsty yet?
Okay, Mr. Rogers, I think it's time now for some Lipton iced tea. This ain't no sipping tea. And we shall return.
Thank you, Nasser. On that note, we'll take a few seconds for a quick break, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Fisichella, and you are listening F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and racing regards from the world of Motorsports Mondial. We shall begin with MotoGP from Sepang, Malaysia. Perfect 10 for Pecco. Italian Francesco Bagnaia took his 10th win of the season to keep his championship chances alive. Jorge Martin was second, top four riders all on Ducati. Hot and steamy weather did not stop 88,000 people from showing up for the race. The final round, number 20, was supposed to take place in Valencia but has been moved to Barcelona on November 15 due to recent flooding. Martin leads the championship over Bagnaia, 485 points to 461. So if Martin wins the championship, he will be winning it on home soil. So I'm sure the natives will not be restless and they'll be totally elated. The record for most wins in MotoGP in one season belongs to Marc Marquez. He won 13 races in 2014. Second is Mick Doohan with 12 wins during the 1997 season. Next season, his son Jack will race in F1 with Alpine. And of course, he's replacing Esteban Ocon, who is moving to Haas. Two Italian legends are joined third with 11 wins each during a season, Valentino Rossi and Giacomo Agostini. Now we go to Bahrain for the World Endurance Championship. The season finale saw Toyota winning the race for the 8th consecutive year and with it the Constructors' Championship. Winning drivers were Sebastian Buemi, Brendan Hartley and Ryo Hirakawa. Porsche won the Drivers' Championship with André Lotterer, Kevin Estre, and Lawrence Venthoor. And now, ladies and gentlemen, members of the jury, and most importantly, members of the F1 Weekly Familia, we have feature conversation of the week with Mr. Derek Warwick. Derek raced in Formula 1 for many years. He was sports car world champion, and today is a race steward in Formula One. Not too long ago, he was also president of the BRDC, British Racing Drivers Club, and they own the Silverstone Circuit. He is a mighty fine gentleman. Really enjoyed talking to him, and I hope our listeners will enjoy this trip down memory lane with him. Folks, I'm here with Derek Warwick. Sir, first of all, nice to meet you. How are you today?
I'm good. Yeah, we just had the sprint race. A great race here in Austin, so I'm very happy that there was nothing too much for us to steward on.
Well, this brings me to my next question. As a lifelong Formula One fan with wonderful memories of races like 1979 French Grand Prix, is the sport too regulated when it comes to action on the track?
For sure, back in my day, it was different. We were allowed to do more things, get away with more things. I think today maybe the drivers are a bit more restricted than what we were back in the early days. But they have a tougher job in many ways because they have social media, yourself, which is very intrusive. I think it's maybe a little bit too restrictive, yes.
You know, even drivers are getting in on the action, complaining on the team radio of unsafe release during practice and qualifying. Apart from your job requirement with FIA, but more as a fan and a successful racing car driver, how do you look at the situation with drivers complaining also?
It was no different than my day. You know, if somebody did something to me, I would come on the radio and tell. I think there's more of a blame issue in today's racing than back in the day because these guys, you know, it's tough out there, you know, and I think that they or the teams, a bit disappointing in many ways, that sometimes the teams report other teams. Yeah. That didn't happen in my day. You just got on with it and got on with the racing.
You mentioned it's tough out there. Now we have, you know, these driver development programs, management programs. Is it easier for a talented teenager to get into racing now who does not have a lot of money, or was it easier in your days?
Much easier in my day. We had no money, and we did Formula Ford, Formula 3 with almost no money at all. Nowadays, if you've got no money, you're not going to go motor racing. You know, to do Formula 3 now is anything between £900,000 and 1.3. In my day, I did it less than £20,000. So, you know, it was easier in my day to have a few friends that helped you to go motor racing. Now you need big companies in order to sponsor you to go through to Formula One.
This has been a season of surprises. What was the biggest surprise for you, Lewis leaving Mercedes or Adrian Newey leaving Red Bull?
I think Lewis. You know, Lewis signing for Ferrari, I think, shocked everybody. I think it's a good move for him. Maybe he's been too long at Mercedes and he needs something to reignite him. And I think we will see a different Lewis next year in red overalls. If the car is competitive, I think it will maybe light his fire.
How will he go against Leclerc?
That's interesting. I think we're all waiting. All these drivers, with the engineers and with the data and everything they have, can find all the milliseconds that we could only find with our backsides. You know, we used our backside to find the best solution in the car, whereas now they've got maybe 50 engineers looking at, you know, the best. So how will Lewis fare against Charles? I think it would be an even fight. Maybe with a different team and a different focus, Lewis can get back to where we've seen him in the past 10 years.
Now, Lando Norris, George Russell, Lewis Hamilton, Ollie Bearman on the grid in 2025. The future of British motor racing is rock solid, and the nation has produced far more world champions than in any other country. What is the reason for this tremendous success? Are the British drivers really wee bit better and faster, or is it because the Formula One industry is pretty much within 100 miles of Heathrow Airport?
I think that there's a lot of British teams, you know, and there's a lot of young driver programs, which I'm involved with. I'm involved with the BIDC Superstars, and next week I go back to England for the Autosport Silverstone Autosport Young Driver of the Year. And all those drivers you've just said have come through our young driver program. I think it all works in different ways. You know, back in the day, we saw a lot of French drivers, a lot of Italian drivers, because they had support from the national companies, you know, like Alf and Marlborough and things like that. Whereas I think we have good training, good karting teams, And we're seeing a lot of young drivers come through that. The driver you didn't mention there was Alexander Albon. I like to claim him as British. And next year we will have 5 British drivers on the grid, which is 25% of the grid. So, yeah, I think Great Britain is in a very healthy situation with all its young drivers. And also Silverstone signing a 10-year contract is perfect with the drivers that we have.
Another young chap, very, very talented, Freddie Slater. How do you rate him?
I will let you know next week, because the 4 drivers that we are comparing next week is Slater, Louis Sharp, Deacon Fairclough, and who am I missing? And Arvid Lindblad. So we've got 4 great, great young British drivers going head-to-head.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, Netflix has changed the face of Formula One, especially here in the U.S. Instead of races in Dallas, Phoenix, and parking lot of Caesars Palace, we have Miami, Kota, and Formula One back in Vegas, but this time they have landed on the Strip. Are you happy with the work Liberty Media has done in promoting Formula One here and globally?
You know, they've made Formula One a global sport, and I think that the bigger we can watch our sport grow, the better it is for everybody. Having 3 American races is very, very important for the sport, and I think Liberty are doing a good job overall.
Okay, we don't have a Grand Prix in the land of Fangio, no Grand Prix in the land of Schumacher, but there is talk of Grand Prix in Rwanda. What is your opinion on Formula One going to places where there is hardly any culture of karting, let alone single-seaters?
It's a world championship, so we need to be in as many countries as possible. There's no point having too many races in any one country, because all it does is it dilutes the people that watch and follow. So if we can be in more and more countries, you know, if we could go to India and places like that, it would be great for the World Championship. But I don't particularly like to see more than 24 races. I think we're at the limit. We're at the limit of 24 races with mechanics, engineers, drivers, and teams.
Okay. The first Formula One race I went to was the 82 Italian Grand Prix Monza. Cars were very loud. And one thing I will never forget, Derek, is the whistling sound of your Cougar Marine-sponsored Dolman Turbo. Do you remember that car, and how would you rate your 2 seasons with the team?
Well, I raced 4 seasons with Dolman. We raced F2 in 1980, and then I raced with Dolmans in 81, 82, and 83. 81 and 82 was a bit of a disaster. The car was not very good. It was not quick. The engine had problems because we didn't have much money. But then 83, we started to find a direction, and we started to go better and better. So my time in the early days of Formula One was really, really difficult. I was very proud to be a Formula One driver from the background I had.
And how does a talented young driver like yourself in those days keep motivation high when you have a package, you know, it's not, car may not even finish, and getting into the points may be a big deal?
Very simple. Never look back. Never wish you're somebody else. Never wish that you were driving a different car. And that was my strength, that I focused on what I had, not what I didn't have. I couldn't change what I didn't have, so I just worked harder and harder on what I had in front of me. I never wished that I was driving for another team. I never wished that I was Ayrton Senna. I just did the best with what I had.
Speaking of Ayrton Senna, he blocked you from coming to Lotus, and then I believe at the end of the year he sent you a Christmas card. Did you ever ask him, hey, why did you block me? And more importantly, do you still have that Christmas card?
I have a Christmas card and also a letter from the family. I help carry the coffin to the grave.
Really?
But for me, when I look back, maybe he was a little bit instrumental to my career stalling a little bit. I think he didn't want me in the team because I was British team. We had equal number one status in the team, and we had equal share. And I think Ayrton was selfish enough to know that the team wasn't big enough to support 2 number one drivers. So he did what's best for Ayrton.
Monza 1990, lap one, your Camel Lotus racing towards Parabolica, and you please pick up the story from there.
Well, I was too close to the car in front. The car, we understeered off, hit the barrier, took the left side of the car out, and then went down the track at 150 miles an hour on its side. And then when it stopped, I realized it was a red flag. So I knew that if I could get into the pits, we had spare cars in them days, if I knew I could get into the pits and out in 15 minutes, I could restart the race. So that's what I did. My mother wasn't very happy, but I was very happy.
You know, as I mentioned, I was living in California watching this race incident at 5 a.m. We could not believe when you got out, and even more when you were running for the spare car. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Okay, winning the World Sports Car Championship and Le Mans, I believe it was with Peugeot. What were the highs and lows of the season, and does this success make up for not having a Grand Prix win?
No, missing a Grand Prix win is something I would have liked to have on my CV. But winning the World Championship with Peugeot, winning Le Mans, certainly is a big plus, and it was something that is on my CV, and I'm very proud to have it on my CV. But it was a difficult time because it was, you know, only a few months after my little brother was killed, and that was difficult to not lose the memory, but also to not allow the memory to slow me down.
Yeah, I remember Paul's unfortunate accident. You bring this up, so if I may ask, how did that affect your parents?
They never got over it. We were a very close family. I've got three sisters. And when that happened, my mother never got older, never got over it, nor did my father. I was still racing, so my father still came to the races. But it was very difficult for everybody.
Understand. Okay, now you are, I believe, living in Jersey and you own a Honda dealership. When Honda wins a race, does that help the car sales?
No. I there's no connection whatsoever.
Really?
No. I think, you know, when Red Bull wins the race or the championship, I'm not sure anybody even thinks it's got a Honda engine.
Yeah.
So it has no correlation whatsoever. I certainly... don't even think about it. So now the dealership's very successful. It doesn't need the success of Formula One to help it.
Great. Final question. With all your success on and off the track, which includes being president of BRDC in the past, what are you most proud of when you look back on your racing achievements and life?
I don't know. I'm very proud of the fact that not winning a Grand Prix, not always in the right car, never slowed me down. I kept on pushing forward. I never, like I said just now, I never wished I was anything else or anybody else. I'm very proud of coming from a young lad welding trailers and spraying trailers, racing on the short ovals to get to a Formula One race driver. The journey has been fantastic.
Racing drivers like myself, we are very proud of people like you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Derek, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Back to you, Nas.
Okay, folks, now we go back to the Brazilian Grand Prix, but this time history of the Brazilian Grand Prix. The race has taken place in two Brazilian cities, Sao Paulo, home to names like Emerson Fittipaldi, Ayrton Senna, the two-legged Rubinho, and Felipe Baby. The other city to host the Brazilian Grand Prix is Rio de Janeiro, birthplace of Mr. Nelson Piquet, who now resides in the capital city of Brasilia. The first non-championship Formula One race in Brazil was in 1972 at Interlagos and was won by Carlos Reutemann of neighboring Argentina in a Brabham. Emerson Fittipaldi won the first championship race at the Interlagos circuit in 1973 in his Lotus. The track, as we all know, is now named after another local son, Carlos Pache, who won his home race, his one and only, in 1975, driving for Mr. Bernie Ecclestone. In 1989, R. Nige won the race in Rio in his first drive for Ferrari, which was also the first race for the semi-automatic gearbox developed by John Barnard. Prost was second, local driver Mauricio Gugelmin finished third in his March, and this was the last podium for March. As I'm sure most of our listeners know, the M in March is for Max Mosley. And speaking of Mauricio Gugelmin, he was a friend of Ayrton Senna when they were in Formula Ford in England, and after his Formula One career, he raced for many years here in the United States and was known as Big Mo. Johnny Herbert made his Grand Prix debut in this race in a Benetton, finished fourth, after recovering from breaking his legs at Brands Hatch in a Formula 3000 race a few months earlier. And it was shortly after this race that the Benetton family brought in Flavio Briatore, and the first thing he did was kicked out the team manager, Peter Collins, who is very well known and like Peter Windsor from Australia. And at one time he was at Lotus also. And one of the things he did not like Peter Collins doing was signing Johnny Herbert while he was still in his crutches. But Johnny, you know, made his debut and finished fourth, so that was not bad. Okay, moving on to the 2006 race, Sao Paulo was the final race for Michael Schumacher for Ferrari. He was presented a Lifetime Achievement Award before the race by Pele, and missing from the ceremony was Kimi Raikkonen. He famously told Martin Brundle he could not attend because he was busy doing caca business. And Brundle responded and made Kimi smile, which is so hard to do, by saying, "At least you will have a lighter car." And sir, with all due respect to Michael Schumacher's tremendous debut, Spa 91 and 91 Grand Prix wins, it was this race that I will remember him for. If you will recall, he got a tire early in the race, having some argy-bargy with Fisico's Renault, dropped back, and then he put in a drive that you would only expect from a few drivers that you can again count on the fingers of one hand. Absolutely incredible. Okay, now where do we go now? Let's see. Okay, among the many Brazilian Grand Prix drivers who won in Formula One, I think Rubens Barrichello, is the only one who did not win his home Grand Prix. On a positive note, and I hope it stays this way, there has never been a fatal accident during the Brazilian Grand Prix weekend. But French driver Philippe Straff had a very serious accident during pre-season testing, from which he was paralyzed. And I think this accident took place at the Rio Jacarepaguá circuit, which is no longer there, sitting now under the Olympic Stadium, I believe. Michael Andretti had a lucky escape when he collided with Gerhard Berger on the opening lap of the 1993 Grand Prix in Sao Paulo. And now we look at some drivers. Now we look at some drivers who took their maiden wins in the Brazilian Grand Prix. First was Carlos Pache, homeboy, in 1975. René Arnoux took his maiden win also in Sao Paulo in 1980, driving his Renault Turbo. Then we have Giancarlo Fisichella, winning in a Jordan in 2003, but he did not get his trophy till the next round at Imola. In the rain-affected race, even though he finished ahead of the track, victory was given to Kimi because they, in their own wisdom, they went back one lap prior to the checkered flag. The Iceman was kind enough, and I respect him a lot for this because I've seen drivers not do this. The Iceman was kind enough to return the trophy to the rightful winner at Imola. Before this year's Grand Prix weekend, three current drivers had taken victories at Interlagos. LCH, George Russell, and Max. And of course, Russell took his first win here in 2022, which was the only victory for Mercedes that season. Alain Prost is the most successful driver in Brazil, winning six times, winning with three different teams, Renault, McLaren, and Ferrari. And we must talk about Machismo. Even though both his world championships were secured in Brazil, Fernando Alonso has never won the Brazilian Grand Prix. Speaking of winning the championship in Sao Paulo in 2009, Jenson Button turned into an instant Freddie Mercury on the cool-down lap. And who can forget the dramatic season finale in 2007 when McLaren snatched defeat from the jaws of victory and handed the title to Kimi and Ferrari. And that, to this day, is the last world championship won by a Ferrari driver. So Lewis Hamilton will have a lot on his shoulders, and that will be exciting in the next few years. Now, the following year, 2008, we had that incredible, is that Glock moment on the final corner of the final lap. Local boy Felipe Massa was world champion for 15 seconds before LCH took the first of his 7 championships. And who can forget a pussycat doll jumping around, as Bob Washer said, in a cocktail dress. So that was very nice. Mr. Rogers, would you have anything to say on the history of Brazilian Grand Prix? Any memories that stand out for you?
Well, of course, Schumacher's drive in his final season was fantastic, as you just pointed out. Fernando not letting Perez pass a couple years ago. I think that was just last year, maybe. My memory is so shot. But that was exciting. The huge accident, Fernando survived, of course, at Brazil. And all the wonderful Brazilian Grand Prix in the past. I love Brazil. Samba.
Now we come to famous last words. And today they come from Race Winner. After the race in Mexico, many slings and arrows were aimed at Max, coming from Damon Hill, Johnny Herbert, Martin Brundle, among others. In the post-race press conference in Brazil, Max Verstappen said, and I quote, "I have a quick question. I mean, I appreciate all of you being here, but I don't see any British press. Do they have to run to the airport, or they don't know what the press conference is?" End quote. And finally, sir, we come to Musical Mundial. Music from Brazil is famous all around the world. Everybody knows Sergio Mendes in Brazil 66. So we're going to end the show with some music from Senor Mendes. And this is a tune which I like very much and is very famous. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy Mais Que Nada. Obrigado. Adios.
Good night.
Mais que nada, sai da minha frente que eu quero passar. Pois o samba está animado, o que eu quero é samba. Este samba que misto de maracatu. É samba de preto veio, samba de preto tudo. Mais que nada, um samba como este tão legal. Você ainda vai querer que eu chegue no final.